Hello, this is the download of Business Daily. I'm Leslie Kerwin. In today's programme, microfinance in crisis as people struggle to repay their loans.
After I became
That's all in Business Daily from the BBC. The commercialisation of microfinance has reaped a whirlwind. India's microfinance industry is reported to be facing possible collapse as almost all the borrowers in one state, Andhra Pradesh, have stopped repaying their loans. Politicians there have accused the industry of profiteering from lending tiny amounts to the poor. And they've introduced tough new laws restricting how the companies lend money and forbidding intimidation of borrowers who can't pay. The authorities in Bangladesh have brought in new rules for the same reasons. Microfinance, or microcredit, was born in Bangladesh in the 1970s and operated by non-profit-making groups. But international lenders and many Western governments have since encouraged a shift towards greater commercialisation and aggressive marketing of the industry. The hope was that the microloans would empower poor people across the world to start their own businesses and create economic growth. But in some cases, it has pushed poor borrowers into taking high-cost loans they can't afford. The BBC's Unbarasan Etirajan went to a village near Dhaka in Bangladesh to put together this report.
My name is Jobeda Begum. I work as a labourer on daily wages. My earning was not sufficient enough to support myself and my ailing mother, so I borrowed a loan of 11,000 taka, about $150, from a microfinance company. I set up a small poultry farm next to my hut to earn extra money with the loan. And I was repaying my installments promptly. But after I fell from a ladder during work, I could not go to work. After I became immobilized, I couldn't afford to repay my loan. My chickens also died. The microfinance company officials are now putting pressure on me to pay back the money. They're asking me to sell my small shanty house to pay the money.
This is the story of many borrowers of microcredit in Bangladesh, which is the birthplace of the global microcredit movement. Often, borrowers do not know the interest rates or the terms and conditions of their loans. Many microfinance agencies charge interest rates of between 20 and 50%. After a series of complaints over exorbitant interest rates and coercive debt collection methods, Bangladeshi authorities have now capped the interest rate at 27%.
You're listening to Business Daily from the BBC with Leslie Kerwin. So is microfinance a blessing which allows people to better themselves, or a curse which lands them in too much debt, or a confusing mix of both? I asked Dr. Kazi Kolikuzaman Ahmad, who runs the PKSF Foundation in Bangladesh. It provides funding and advice for microfinance institutions.
Some of us have been asking questions, in fact, for many years now, that what is actually happening to the people who are borrowing money? And that question still remains unanswered properly, although we have observations and some data to say that there are problems facing by the people who borrow money.
What kind of problems?
For example, the money has to be started, returned from 1 week after the money is borrowed. So after 1 week, one installment, and how can a person earn money in 1 week to be able to pay back? So throughout this year, it's a loan that's given for 1 year, and the interest rate is calculated on the total amount at a flat rate, which is between 12.5% and 15% right now. And then the total amount interest plus the principal is divided into 46 or 47 weeks. And each installment has to be paid every week. So that's a big problem. The other thing that we have noticed is there has not been an asset build-up in the households of the borrowing people.
What do you mean by that, an asset build-up?
An additional piece of land, for example, or a machinery to start some business or upgrade some business, or in fact, skill development, that's also kind of an asset. So these have not been happening for the large majority of the micro borrowers.
So this is what was always meant to happen, wasn't it? That if you lent small amounts of money to people, that they would be able to start their own businesses, they would be able to generate more money, and that would spread an economic good. So you're saying the evidence for that is not there?
No. In fact, there are only few, I think a small percentage of the borrowers who have been able to upgrade themselves, but the large majority have not. They have just been surviving. Having said that, let me also say that this expansion of microcredit has given at least a basic understanding of the people, particularly of women, how to deal with people outside. So that's one benefit, I think, that has come out of it. But in terms of economic and social development, there has not been much, I think, that can be described as a success.
You've been quoted as saying that microcredit can be a death trap for the poor. What do you mean by that?
Well, actually, in my observations, we found people who borrowed money and they were not able to pay back, and therefore they borrowed from another source and then another source and so on. And also they had to sell sometimes their whatever little assets they had. So they were becoming poorer and poorer. In the end, some of the people had to flee the places where they lived, and the others were caught and in some cases had to undergo some kind of punishment.
So you're talking here about threats and violence?
Threats and violence is part of it, but it's not the most important element. I think that that's happening, but not on a large scale. But the main important thing is that they are not able to pay, and therefore they are borrowing from various sources and then becoming, in fact, destitute in the end.
Let me ask you about what happens if there is a natural disaster such as floods and people just can't repay the loan.
In some cases, we have seen that the microfinance institutions still insist that the installments must be paid. Although the government and the organization I now head have clear instructions that they should not do it. Our microfinance institutions, by and large, don't, but the others do. Even the large ones try to collect the money.
The government has tried to clamp down on some of the activities you've described, hasn't it?
Yes.
What effect has that had?
No, you see, very recently, what has been done is Microcredit Regulatory Authority has taken some decisions. For example, we have now put a cap on the rate of interest. The national rate has been put at 27% on a declining balance method. So 27% is the rate of interest. Whatever principal is paid, then deduct that and then charge the same rate, just like a bank operates.
Is microcredit a bad idea? Is it hurting people's lives? And should the world forget about it? It's been this great big theory, hasn't it? This theology almost, that this is the way to help the poorest people on the planet.
No, I don't think we should abandon it. I think that there's a window of opportunity. We can change things that we have started changing in Bangladesh. But of course, it is only one element. You know, you just can't eradicate poverty and put people on path of sustainable development with only one element. It's a part of an integrated process. When you introduce an integrated process, and we are now starting to do in Bangladesh, there my credit will be not necessarily microcredit. Credit will be one element, and there will be a whole lot of others, education, health services, and asset building. All these are extremely important. So from this experience of microcredit, we now learn what needs to be done in order to change the landscape, as it were. So the poverty is still in Bangladesh as well as elsewhere. It's very, very high. And you can't just go on trying microcredit to reduce that at a fast enough rate.
I was talking to Dr. Kazi Kolikuzaman Ahmad of PKSF. So have the